Hello, this is the Braille Sensei U2. I am now in complete control of this podcast. No more boring tech doctor, only me.
Yeah, right, buddy. You forget that I know exactly where your power switch is. I know where that reset button is on the back. You are absolutely not in control. The tech doctor is in the house. Hello, everybody. The reason that the Braille Sensei U2 is behaving like this is because it is the feature of this podcast. And he's gotten just a little too big for his carrying case, at least in his mind anyway. But that's what happens sometimes when you decide to feature someone or something on a podcast. At any rate, here's what I plan to do. I plan to, first of all, describe the Braille Sense U2 and compare it to its predecessor, the Braille Sense Plus, because the U2 is a significant step forward in many, many ways, and I want to highlight those ways with some data. I think all too often when we hear about these devices, we sort of get generalizations about does this and it does that. But I think this comparison will give you a real idea of what this device is like, at least as it compares to the earlier generation. And after we go through some of the data, I want to do some demonstrations of some of the applications that are available on the U2. That gives you a basis for making a decision about whether or not you feel that the Braille Sense U2 might be a good choice for you. It does come in two models, one with a Braille keyboard, which is the one that I'll be featuring on this podcast, and also a model with a QWERTY keyboard. The QWERTY keyboard model has been redesigned and is much thinner, and it has a fabulous keyboard. I would rate the keyboard on the QWERTY up there with the type of keyboard that's on the Apple MacBook products. Plenty of room on it, very nice feeling keys, and so if you really prefer working with a Braille device using a QWERTY keyboard, you might want to check out the Braille Sense U2 QWERTY. It, of course, has the same features and the same specs as the Braille Sense U2 with the Braille keyboard, but it has the QWERTY keyboard, meaning that, of course, there are different commands because the keyboard's different. Anyway, I will not be discussing the Braille Sense U2 QWERTY further in this podcast, but do encourage you to investigate it if you're interested in a Braille device with a QWERTY keyboard. Let me also say that, of course, because this is a podcast, I'll be demonstrating things using the built-in speech synthesizer in the Braille Sense U2. But for me, the real power and the real important component of a device like this is the fact that it's a Braille device. And 99% of the time, I actually use the Braille Sense U2 with the voice turned off and only in Braille mode. This gives me the capability of working silently on the U2. And in my profession as a psychologist and in my personal life as well, it's extremely important to be able to sit in a meeting or sit in a conference and be able to take notes silently. The Braille Sense U2 is an excellent multitasking device. It can run up to 7 of its applications at the same time, and you can switch back and forth between the apps just with a keystroke. And this is really great because this unit actually has the processing power and the RAM to make this seamless. You can easily run several applications at once, and there's no delay, no breakup, no lag, just because you have a number of applications running at the same time. It's not unusual for me to sit in a meeting and have the email program running, the word processor running, Twitter running, and sometimes even the web browser with a website open to, of course, a page that pertains to the content of the meeting. So what I'm going to do now is go through some statistics or data comparing the U2 with the predecessor BrailleSense Plus. And the BrailleSense Plus has been replaced by the BrailleSense U2. Well, one of the first things that people always want to know is the price. And the price of the BrailleSense Plus was $5,995, and that has stayed the same. The U2 is also $5,995. In terms of the underlying operating system, the BrailleSense Plus used Windows CE version 5. The BrailleSense U2 uses Windows CE version 6. As far as RAM is concerned for running programs, the BrailleSense Plus had 128 megabytes. The BrailleSense U2 has 256 megs of RAM. Both devices have a 9-key Perkins-style keyboard. This is a almost silent keyboard, very ergonomically designed, sturdy feeling, excellent keyboard in my opinion. They also have 4 function keys. There are various switches. The power switch on the U2 operates a bit differently in that it is a spring-loaded switch that only moves in one direction, which actually is quite a bit nicer than the two-direction spring-loaded switch that was on the BrailleSense Plus. Also on the BrailleSense U2, the key lock switch has been moved from the front of the unit to the right side of the unit. This is allowing the U2 to have space for its built-in GPS receiver antenna on the front of the unit. Both devices have a 32-cell Braille display. It's a very sharp display with easy-to-read Braille. Extremely nice Braille, in my opinion. Up above each cell on the 32-cell Braille display is a cursor routing button. It's really more like a little bar up above each cell, and the bar is the perfect size to easily be located right above the cell. As far as appearance goes, the two units are identical in terms of their size, weight, feel. They are slightly different in color in that on the BrailleSense Plus, the unit is white and the keys are gray. So is the trim. On the U2, the keys are gray and the unit is white, but the trim is a dark red color, so the U2 might be more appealing to a sighted person. Also, for the benefit of sighted people who are involved in working with the U2, it now has 4 LED displays that the BrailleSense Plus did not have. So a sighted person can look at the LEDs and tell the state of Wi-Fi, the state of Bluetooth, the signal strength of the GPS receiver, and can also determine whether the power is on or off on the U2. The BrailleSense Plus had 1 USB port, a full-size port, and 1 OTG port intended to plug a computer into the device. It's a smaller USB port. The U2 has 3 USB ports and the 1 OTG port for plugging in a computer. The BrailleSense Plus had a compact flash card slot. The U2 does not. So the U2 got additional USB ports to replace the compact flash slot. Both units have an SD card slot, and the BrailleSense Plus would support up to 32 gig SD cards. The U2 will support up to 64 gig high-speed SD cards. The BrailleSense Plus had a serial port. The U2 does not have a serial port. You can use a USB to serial cable if you need serial connections, but serial connections aren't used nearly as much as they used to be. In terms of internal storage, the BrailleSense Plus had 8 gigabytes of flash memory, and the BrailleSense U2 has 32 gigs of flash memory built in, so 4 times the storage. I'm now going to provide you with some numbers based on some testing that HIMSS did regarding the speed at which the two units did various things and how they compare. The first area that we're going to talk about is how quickly the two units are able to zip or compress files. The BrailleSense Plus on a 100 megabyte file would take an average of 1 hour, 37 minutes, and 17 seconds. On a 300 megabyte file, the Plus would take an average of 4 hours, 50 minutes. On the U2, it will zip or compress a 100 megabyte file in an average of 4 minutes, 20 seconds. A 300 megabyte file takes an average of 12 minutes, 50 seconds. So there's a tremendous increase in how quickly the U2 can zip or compress files over the BrailleSense Plus. In terms of the ability to uncompress or unzip files, it took the BrailleSense Plus 55 minutes, 20 seconds to unzip a 100 meg file. It took the BrailleSense Plus 3 hours to unzip a 300 megabyte file. The U2 on a 100 megabyte file will uncompress it in about 1 minute, 21 seconds. It will uncompress a 300 meg file in about 3 minutes, 37 seconds. So again, a tremendous increase in performance as far as uncompressing files as well. Okay, let's take a look at file opening speed. On the BrailleSense Plus, a 1 meg file would take an average of 5.5 seconds to open. A 2 meg file, an average of 8 seconds. And a 5 meg file, an average of 11 seconds. On the U2, a 1 meg file would take 4 seconds to open. 2 meg, 6 seconds. And a 5 meg, 7 seconds. So you get a good bit of speed increase when opening files on the U2. Of course, both devices support the use of SD cards. And I should point out that the U2 is significantly faster at reading information from SD cards. And it also supports up to 64 gig high-speed SD cards, whereas the Braille Plus only supported up to 32 gig SD cards. In terms of the speed at which the devices are capable of transferring files from the SD to the flash disk, with the BrailleSense Plus, it would take an average of 5 minutes, 3 seconds to transfer a 100 megabyte file. On the U2, it takes an average of 1 minute, 28 seconds to transfer a 100 megabyte file from the SD card to the flash disk. If you look at transferring files from the flash disk to the SD card, a 100 meg file on the BrailleSense Plus would take 3 minutes, 37 seconds on average, and 1 minute, 5 seconds on the BrailleSense U2. In terms of wireless LAN support, the BrailleSense Plus supported the Wi-Fi B and G connectivity protocols. The BrailleSense U2 supports B, G, and N connectivity. The U2 also supports the WPA1 and WPA2 encryption protocols. It will also support the use of an iPhone or iPad as a hotspot if your plan with your carrier allows tethering. The U2 is quite a bit more flexible in the Wi-Fi networks that it will connect to. I don't have any trouble connecting the U2 to my Apple Time Capsule router running WPA2. There is a version of WPA2 called WPA2 Enterprise that is used by the wireless system at the university where I work, and the U2 will not connect with WPA2 Enterprise. I did recently try the U2 in a hotel where I was staying and had no problem logging into the hotel Wi-Fi. In the past, there have been problems where when you log into a hotel Wi-Fi and it redirects you to the web page for the hotel, and you have to click on a button that says you accept all their rules and so forth before it will let you actually get on the internet. There have been problems in the past with using the BrailleSense to locate these buttons on some hotel web pages, but I had no problem using the hotel web page to click on the proper button to get me on the internet. So I think wireless LAN connectivity is significantly improved in the U2 in terms of the time that it takes on average for the two devices to connect to a Wi-Fi network. It took an average of 9 seconds on the BrailleSense Plus, and it takes an average of 7 seconds on the U2. Both devices have built-in Ethernet ports, so you can plug an Ethernet cable directly into the U2. The BrailleSense Plus would take an average of 10 seconds to make the connection, and the U2 would also take 10 seconds. When we look at the opening of web pages in the web browser, and we're using a wireless internet connection for these tests, it would take the BrailleSense Plus an average of 43 seconds to open a typical web page the first time, and an average of 36 seconds the second time. That's because some caching gets done. On the U2, it would take an average of 20 seconds to open a web page for the first time, and an average of 10 seconds to open one the second time. The BrailleSense U2 also offers customers the option of purchasing a 3G modem. This would be purchased from your carrier like Verizon or maybe AT&T. But these 3G modems give the U2 the capability of connecting to the internet anywhere that there's cellular coverage. You don't have to have a regular Wi-Fi connection or a wired connection at that point. In terms of email, I am really happy that the U2 and the BrailleSense Plus and the BrailleSense On Hand now support both IMAP and POP3 protocols. This is a new feature that is part of the version 7 firmware for the HIMSS Braille devices. When we look at some of the speed differences in working with email, the email send speed, it took the BrailleSense Plus 1 minute 17 seconds on average to send 1 megabyte worth of email. 2 megs worth of email took 2 minutes 28 seconds on average. 3 megs took 3 minutes 44 seconds on average on the BrailleSense Plus. On the U2, took 5 seconds to send 1 meg worth of mail, 2 megs 7 seconds, and 3 megs an average of 10 seconds. We look at download speeds. 1 meg of mail would take 12 seconds on average on the BrailleSense Plus, an average of 14 seconds for 2 megs on the Plus and an average of 18 seconds for 3 megs on the Plus. On the U2, would take an average of 4 seconds to download 1 meg worth of mail, 5 seconds for 2 megs, and 6 seconds for 3 megs. In terms of word processing, they support the HIMSS Braille format, which is called HBL. They support the .brl format, the .brf format, the .txt, .doc, .docx, .rtf, .pdf, and .epub formats. Something that people have wanted for a very long time is the support of Microsoft Word doc, and especially the .x, the .docx format, which is the current Microsoft Word format. In version 7, HIMSS introduced the ability to open .docx files. This is an ongoing work in progress. It will be improved in the next release of the firmware, I'm confident. There are some lingering issues where some .docx files open slowly or don't open at all right now. HIMSS is working on this problem. They're also working to support as fully as possible formatting of .docx files and the ability to save formatting information so that you can really work on a .docx file and save it and send it to a sighted computer user who's working in Word, and they'll be able to open the file and the formatting will all be there. One thing I really like about the U2 is that the sound quality has been improved quite a bit over the BrailleSense Plus. They're using a different audio codec, which improved the sound. They've also gone from a 250 milliwatt amplifier to a 1.2 watt amplifier, and this really helps the sound quality. They have redesigned the speaker holes, or the openings where the sound comes out on the U2, and this is an improvement. And in terms of media features, the U2 has an 11 setting or an 11 band equalizer, as opposed to the 5 setting equalizer that was on the BrailleSense Plus. So on the U2, for example, you can set a setting for rock, pop, soul, classic, dance, heavy, disco, soft, 3D, hall, normal. The file formats that the media player is capable of working with have stayed the same on the two units. They are FLAC, MID, AVI, WMA, WMV, AAC, ASF, and in Audible, they support both the AA and the AAX format. Supports ASX, M3U, M4A, MP2, MP3, MP4, OGG, PLS, WAV, WAX, and ASX. In terms of Bluetooth support, both devices, of course, have a built-in Bluetooth radio. The U2 supports both Bluetooth headsets in mono and stereo. In terms of GPS, the U2 has a built-in GPS receiver. When it comes to GPS, you have two choices on any of the BrailleSense devices that are running version 7.0. There is an app now which allows you to access Google Maps, where you can get some basic information about your location. You can create a route. You can do searches for points of interest and, again, get some basic information. You can also, of course, purchase as an additional option the Sendero GPS called SenseNav for the BrailleSense products, and it's a much more full-featured GPS solution that has really dozens of features. They did make a nice addition to the U2 hardware. They added vibration motor. One of the nice things about the vibration motor is that you can set the U2 up so that anytime there's a report of a progress or a status indicator of some sort, you can set it up to vibrate as opposed to beep or say something. And this is very nice for someone who's deafblind, and also very nice for someone who wants the unit to operate completely silently in a meeting or conference situation, say, but who wants the feedback that you need to get sometimes from various alerts and that kind of thing. There's also a digital compass in the U2. Now let's talk a little bit about the differences in the battery life and the charging times between the U2 and the BrailleSense Plus. In the BrailleSense Plus, you got an average of 10 hours of operation. And in the BrailleSense U2, an average of 17 hours of operation. With the BrailleSense, using the HIMS AC adapter, it took 8 hours to fully charge the battery. And with the U2, using the HIMS AC adapter, it takes 5 hours to fully charge the battery if it's completely drained. The BrailleSense Plus required you to use the HIMS adapter to charge the battery. The U2, in addition to using the HIMS adapter, also allows you to charge the battery through plugging the unit in to the USB port. So you can connect your USB cable to a computer and it will charge the unit that way. The amount of battery life that you get is dependent on how you use the unit. Do you have Wi-Fi turned on? Do you have Bluetooth turned on? Do you have them both turned on? Are you using speech and Braille in combination? Are you only using Braille or only using speech? Number of settings affect battery life. I will tell you this, though. I recently had the opportunity to use the U2 in a 6-hour conference. Yes, I had to sit there for 6 hours. And I used the U2 with Wi-Fi on, with the web browser running, the word processor running, a lot of times Twitter also running. Yes, there's a Twitter app in version 7 of the HIMS firmware, which I will talk about and demonstrate a bit later. But had all these things running almost all day. And when I started in the morning, my battery was at 100% charged. And at the end of the day, when I finished working with the U2, the battery was down to about 80%. I would like to summarize. The basic hardware on the BrailleSense U2 has about 4 times the storage, twice the RAM, and twice the processor speed of the BrailleSense Plus. The U2 has 3 host USB ports and 1 OTG port, so there's greater connectivity possibilities. There is no longer a compact flash slot on the U2, and both units, of course, make use of SD cards, but the U2 can use up to 64 gig high capacity, high speed SD cards. The U2 includes a built-in compass, a built-in GPS receiver, and access to Google Maps for basic route navigation and planning without the need of purchasing additional software. I will say that the Google Maps information is pretty basic, and I find that sometimes it's harder to get a connection with Google Maps than it is to get a connection with the Sendero GPS software that's an additional purchase. The U2 supports wireless LAN, BG, and N, and which allows for a greater speed in connections. It also supports a USB mobile broadband modem, as I said, and this is an option that you might want to consider if you travel a lot. In terms of file management, the U2 is much, much faster at compressing and uncompressing files. This is a major consideration if you're going to want to use the device to download books from NLS or Bookshare or places that provide their files in zip format. And I'll do a demonstration of working with Bookshare and also working with an NLS type book in a bit. In terms of the web browser, the updated browser on the U2 hardware allows for much faster web access and more smooth web navigation. It's really a lot more fluid, reliable experience. And as I mentioned, there are some LED lights on the U2 that are great for a teacher or a parent or someone sighted who wants to know how the device is operating. I think the built-in vibrator motor is a great addition for someone who's deafblind and for those of us who really like to use the product silently. Again, sound quality much improved. The operating and charging times are significantly better on the U2 than they were on the BrailleSense Plus. I would encourage someone who has access to some of the other popular Braille note-taking devices to do a comparison of these features with some of the other devices. I do not have access to other devices and so cannot do that myself. I'm now going to move into going through the U2 menus, kind of letting it speak for itself, and show you some examples of working with some of the applications that are built in and try to give you a flavor for what it's actually like to work with this device in real time. Okay, when you power the U2 on, you come up with the menu, which is the main menu for the device, and it starts with
File Manager F.
Said File Manager F because you can press F from anywhere in this menu to get back to the file manager. But what I'm going to do is just go down the menu here and let you hear what the options are in the U2 menu. And I'm going to just let it say them. I think you can understand them all right. So we're at the file manager now, and next we have
Word Processor, DubSense Navigation, Address Manager, Schedule Manager, Email, Media Player, FM Radio, Web Browser, Daisy Player, Bluetooth Manager, Database Manager, Extras, X, Social Networking Utilities, U, Global Options, O, Help, H.
So those are the options that are on the main menu. As you can see, there's quite an array of applications and options. I'm not going to go through demonstrating some of the more obvious options. Just suffice it to say that the word processor has the features that you would expect in a word processor. You can, of course, edit number of file types. And as I said earlier, HIMSS is really working hard on improving the capability of working with Microsoft Word .doc and .docx files. And I know this is something that people have really wanted. I will point out that the word processor will open PDF and EPUB files, which is really very nice because more and more books are available in EPUB format. Now, this is unprotected EPUB. None of these devices can open DRM-protected EPUB. For example, the EPUB that is available through Apple in its iBook store cannot be read on the BrailleSense U2 because it's copy-protected. It can only be read on an Apple iOS device. So let's take a look at some of these other options in a bit more detail.
File Manager, F.
As you would expect, the File Manager allows you to control your files, see all the files that are on your flash disk, files that are on your SD cards or on your USB devices that are plugged in. You can do the things you would expect. You can rename them, you can delete them, you can copy them, you can move them. You can even set up a way of displaying the files in different orders, by alphabetical order, by size, by date. You can do almost anything in terms of file management that you would want to do. And I don't think most people would find any issues with becoming comfortable with the BrailleSense U2 file manager. Okay, I'm going to demonstrate something that's probably really not quite fair to the U2 and to its internal GPS receiver, because I'm inside my house here, inside my office, and this would work a whole lot better if I went outside like you're supposed to do when you attempt to connect to a GPS receiver and have it locate satellites and get a fix for you and all. But we're going to see, even though keep in mind that it will probably take a bit longer inside the house here, inside the office, with all these computers around and everything. But I'm going to press enter on the SenseNav program, let it come up and search for satellites, and we'll see how long it takes if it gets a fix at all inside the house. If it does, it'll be a testimonial to the fact that this GPS receiver is fairly sensitive.
Sense Navigation version 2012. Loading maps. Please wait. 5 maps loaded. GPS navigation. Receiver connected. Searching for satellites. No GPS fix.
So as I thought, it would take a little while. We're going to let it search for a little while. See if it's able to get us the location information actually from inside the room here.
Acquired position, 2134 Rolling Rock Place, College Station, Texas, 60 feet, 4 satellites. POI, Dynamite Pest Control, bonus.
Okay.
Zip code, 77845.
So that's how long it took to get our position set from inside the house here. So this is quite a nice internal receiver that will work quite well, I think, in most environments. Haven't really done any testing yet comparing the internal receiver with an external receiver, but at least I just wanted to show you that this one does work fairly well even inside a building like this. The address manager and the schedule manager are pretty self-explanatory. They're pretty full-featured, and you can sync the address manager with Outlook. In the schedule manager, you can, of course, set alarms, and you can track appointments, and you can easily determine what your next appointment is and so forth. It's really a very well-designed address and schedule managing system, and those are actually two separate programs. The Schedule Manager is one app, and the Address Manager is another app. I want to spend a little time on the email program. As I said earlier, I'm very pleased that HIMSS is now supporting IMAP email. And for those who don't know, IMAP is an alternative to POP3 email. And the major advantage of IMAP over POP3 is the fact that the IMAP email keeps all of your mail in sync across multiple devices. Because what you actually connect to when you use IMAP is an IMAP server that actually contains all your mail. And so you're actually just manipulating the mail while on the IMAP server. So if I delete a message using my BrailleSense U2, that message will be gone from my iPhone, from my Mac, from any other device that I use to check mail. I have mixed feelings about the way that IMAP currently works on the BrailleSense U2. I really give HIMSS a lot of credit for taking the step forward to implement this protocol. My concern is that the IMAP retrieval of messages is slower than I would like it to be. And let me demonstrate what I mean here. I am pretty confident that this is a work in progress, though, and that HIMSS will continue to improve its working with IMAP. But let's see how it works now. This is, of course, the U2 running HIMSS firmware version 7.0. Before I can demonstrate IMAP email, I have to turn on my wireless internet radio so that it can connect to my Wi-Fi network. I'm going to do that now, and we'll see how long it takes for the Wi-Fi to get connected. Here we go.
Wireless LAN on. Email E.
Okay, the internet is now connected, and that's about how long it took. I thought maybe the speech would announce that, but I forgot. I have my settings of announcements to just use the vibrate motor to vibrate, so you couldn't hear the vibration, but that's how long it took to connect. I am at the other end of the house from the router, so it took a few seconds, but not too bad. So now we're on the internet, and I'm going to press enter on the email software, which will load and bring up my email inbox.
Receiving mail list. Subject, Stitcher's top picks 4444.
So that's how long it took to load the items, and there are 44 items currently in my inbox. And again, we're on the IMAP server. So this item here is actually item 44, which is the most recent item that's come into my inbox. It's an item from a company called Stitcher Radio. Stitcher's Top Picks is what it's called. I'm reading the subject line off the Braille display here, which is what I'm sitting on right now. But I'm going to press enter to open this message and have it start reading a little bit of the message body to you. And we'll see how long it takes to open this message from Stitcher Radio. Here we go. I'm going to press enter right now.
Opening message. The latest top picks on Stitcher. I sell comics. With another San Diego Comic-Con upon us, we recommend tuning into Smodcast's I Sell Comics. Ming Chen and Mike Zapsik will get you caught up on all the latest happenings in the comic book world.
All right, so this is my complaint with IMAP as it's currently implemented, is that it's too slow to open each message. So each time you go to a new message in your inbox, you have to press enter to open the body of the message, and it takes a few seconds for the message to be retrieved from the IMAP server and opened in the BrailleSense U2. Again, I am thrilled to have IMAP support because I don't use POP3 anymore at all. This way, I can have all of my email in sync across all my devices. And so for now, I'm willing to tolerate a bit of slowness in opening the mail. But I think this can be improved, and I think it will be improved as HIMSS continues to tweak their IMAP support. I'd like to briefly demonstrate a few things in the media player. I already talked about all the file formats it supports and so forth, but I want you to hear a little bit of an audible file. This book is called Inside Apple, and I'm going to just press enter on the title of the book. I'm sitting in the file manager, and let the book start reading a little bit, and then I'll pause it and I'll show you a few things about the media player. So here we go.
This is Audible.
Oshut Audio presents Inside Apple, How America's Most Admired and Secretive Company Really Works.
There are lots of ways to work with the media player. You can use the regular keyboard, or you can also use a series of keys that are dedicated to the media player that are on the front of the BrailleSense U2. There's a rewind button, there's a record button, stop button, play pause button, and a fast forward button on the front of the machine. These are differently shaped buttons that are very nicely tactilely marked. And so you can use these buttons to control the media player, or you can use commands from the keyboard. So if I press the play pause button on the front of the machine, the audible file should start playing again.
Written and read by Adam Leshinsky.
One of the things that the media player allows you to do is move through audio files in a lot of different ways. You can move by time. You can move by headings if it's a DAISY audio file and all the different navigation levels that you would expect in a DAISY file. But in Audible books, you can move by section. And typically, in the recent Audible books, a section marker would indicate a new chapter. Some of the earlier Audible books aren't formatted quite so consistently or quite so nicely. Again, that's not the fault of the U2, that's the fault of the Audible formatting. But this particular book is a new one, came out last year, and it is well formatted. So I'm going to show you now how I can jump from chapter to chapter in this Audible book. Here we go. I'm just going to forward through a couple chapters here.
Chapter 1, Rethink Leadership.
Section 2.
Chapter 2, Embrace Secrecy. Apple employees know something big is afoot.
Section 3.
Chapter 3, Focus Obsessively.
Pause.
Okay, so you can see that you can fairly quickly jump forward through chapters in this book, and you can jump backwards equally as well. Now I want to show you the speech compression or the speed adjustments that are available in the media player. And so I'm going to start this chapter 3 reading again, and it's setting at the normal speed setting right now. I'm going to gradually speed it up to its fastest setting, which is speed 5. Leave it reading at its fastest setting for just a few seconds so you can get an idea of what that speed compression sounds like. And then I'll gradually bring it back down to normal speed. So here we go.
Playing.
Tucked away in a walled-off section of the creative studio of Apple's main marketing building is a room devoted to packaging. Compared with weighty and complex tasks such as software design or hardware manufacturing, packaging would be a pedestrian concern at many companies, almost an afterthought. Not at Apple, which devotes tremendous energy and resources to how it wraps its products. The packaging room is so secure that those with access to it need to badge in and out. To fully grasp how seriously Apple executives sweat the small stuff, consider this. For months, a packaging designer was holed up in this room performing the most mundane of tasks, opening boxes. Mundane, perhaps, but also critically important. Inside the covert lab were hundreds of iPod box prototypes. That's right, hundreds of boxes whose sole function was to give the designer the ability to experience the moment when customers picked up and held their new toy for the first time. One after another, the designer created and tested an endless series of arrows, colors, and tapes for a tiny tab designed to show the consumer where to pull back the invisible, full-bleed sticker adhered to the top of the clear iPod box. Getting it just right was this particular designer's obsession. What's more, it wasn't just about one box. The tabs were placed so that when Apple's factory packed multiple boxes for shipping to retail stores, there was a natural negative space between the boxes that protected and preserved the tab. How a customer opens a box must be one of the last things a typical product designer would consider. Yet for Apple, the inexpensive box merits as much attention as the high-margin electronic device inside. As the last thing customers see before their greatly anticipated device, Apple's packages are the capstone to a highly honed and exceedingly expensive process. It begins with prototype design, progresses to a collaboration between supply chain experts who source the components, and product managers who coordinate the assembly of hardware and software, and ends with a coordinated marketing, pricing, and retailing plan to get the devices in consumers' hands. Anticipating how the customer will feel holding a simple white box is merely the culmination of many thousands of details Apple will have thought of along the way.
I went all the way up to speed 5 and came all the way back down to speed 1. I don't ever do this, but somebody might want to. You can also slow the speech even slower than normal speed. I'm going to run through those options right quick of how the speech sounds when you slow it down when it's reading audio. Here we go.
Playing.
Attention to detail to me symbolizes that you really care about the user all the way through, said Deep Nishar, an early Google executive who leads user interface design for the web company LinkedIn. Nishar described the reverence some of the designers who work for him have for the box that held their first iPhone. "Do you remember the packaging it came in?" he asked. "Some of them have kept it on their shelves."
Okay, so I went all the way down. It will go down just a couple of notches, and then I brought it back up to the normal speed. I'm really quite impressed with the speech compression algorithm that is used in the U2. I find the speech, even at top speed, quite easy to understand and not very filled with artifacts that get introduced because you're speeding it up. There are lots of items in this menu, and this podcast is already running long. So I'm not going to get to all of them, obviously. I'm going to kind of skip over the FM radio, for example. It works fine. It's not the world's strongest radio, but the radios in these devices never are, at least not that I've ever seen. But it's certainly an adequate radio. And you can record from it directly onto the unit, and you can also easily set up presets and things like that. But I'm going to skip on to other things. I want to demonstrate the Daisy Player and the web browser kind of in combination. I want to show how you can download some Daisy materials and use them on the U2, because I really like the U2 Daisy Player. Hymns has done a lot of work on improving the way the Daisy Player operates. One of the primary things that I use Daisy materials with is Bookshare. And as most people know, Bookshare is a service, a paid subscription service that lets you download books and other materials, and they make them available in both .brf and DAISY format. I use the DAISY format most of the time because it gives you better navigation options. And HIMSS has written a little app that allows one to easily connect to Bookshare, search for and download books, and then, of course, be able to open those books up in the DAISY player. So I'm going to show you that first, and then I'm going to demonstrate how to download some NLS material. I'm actually going to download a copy of Newsweek magazine from the American Printing House for the Blind and show you how I can go to that site with the web browser, download the file, unzip it, and play it in the DAISY player. But before I do that, I want to show you this Bookshare app and how it works. So I'm going to go to the Extras menu here, which is off the main menu. And I'm going to go down to Bookshare. It's called Bookshare Download. I'm going to press Enter on it. And it's asking me to select my search mode. Books is selected by default. I could choose periodicals, but I'm going to choose
books.
And so I'm going to press Enter on books.
Select search method, search word.
And I can choose to search by word, which includes things like author and title and all that. Or I could search by
category search.
Categories. I could do a category search. But I'm going to go back to word.
Search word.
And
search word, enter title, author, ISBN.
It says enter an author, title, or ISBN. And I'm going to enter a name of one of my favorite authors. Her name is Jodi Picco, so I'm going to enter that now.
J-O-D-I, Jodi. B-I-C-O-U-L-D.
Entered that in grade 2 Braille.
Searching.
The Bookshare app has already returned the search results. That's how fast it connected and pulled down the information for me. And I've got 24 books here that are available on Bookshare by Jodi Picco. I'm going to skip down to a book, find one here that's pretty well known, and download it right quick. My Sister's Keeper is down here in the list, and it was a popular book. It was also made into a movie. I'm going to press Enter to download that book.
Preparing download. Download started. Download done. My Sister's Keeper 1024.
Okay, so now the book is done downloading. I'm going to close the Bookshare app.
Bookshare download, B.
And I'm going to go to my downloads folder.
File manager, F. Flash disk. Audible folder 111. Database folder 211. Download folder 311. The Sounds of the Caribbean folder 15.
And
My Sister's Keeper, Robert Carter, .zip 25.
I've got My Sister's Keeper here in my downloads folder. It's a zip file right now. You can actually set up the Bookshare app to go ahead and unzip the file for you. I don't have mine set up that way. I'm old-fashioned, I guess. I like to go unzip it manually. So I'm going to press Enter on it.
Unzip the folder name, My Sister's Keeper, Robert Carter.
And it asks me the name of the folder that I want to unzip it to, which is by default My Sister's Keeper. It has my name in it as well. So that's fine with me. So I'm just going to press Enter, and let's see how long it takes it to unzip it. Here we go right now.
114 completed, My Sister's Keeper 0000 3.0. 14 decompression completed successfully. My Sister's Keeper, Robert Carter,
.zip 36. Now it's unzipped. So that's how long it took it to unzip it. I'm now going to exit out of the downloads folder and go to the DAISY player.
File manager F. Open DAISY dialog box. The kissing game, Robert Carter, folder 1717.
And it just offered me the chance to open the last book that I was reading earlier, but that's not the one we want, so I'm going to backspace here to get to a different folder.
Suzanne Brockman folder 913, SD, secure digital card.
And
flash disk.
Go open up the flash disk.
Audible folder 111.
And
database folder 2, download folder 311.
Go to my downloads folder.
My sister's
here.
Keeper, Robert Carter folder 12.
And my sister's keeper is right here. I'm going to select that.
Select my sister's keeper, Robert Carter folder 12.
And press enter on it.
45.
And it's opening.
My sister's keeper. Notice. Also by Jody Pickled. Second glance. Perfect match.
So now it's now loaded it, and it's reading the notice that's at the top of the book. I'm going to skip by navigation here by heading to see if I can get to the beginning of the book.
Content. Acknowledgements. Prologue. Monday. Acknowledgements. As the mother of a child. Prologue. No one starts a war, or rather, no one in his sense ought to do so without first being clear in his mind what he intends to achieve by that war and how he intends to conduct it. Karl von Clausewitz, vom Krieg. In my first memory, I am 3 years old, and I am trying to kill my sister. Sometimes the recollection is so clear I can remember the itch of the pillowcase under my hand, the sharp point of her nose pressing into my palm. She didn't stand a chance against me, of course, but it still didn't work. My father walked by, tucking into the house.
The point here is that I simply wanted to demonstrate how quick and easy it is to open up the Bookshare app, locate a book, either by its title or by its author, download that book, unzip it, open it in the Daisy Player, and start reading the book. And of course, you can navigate by whatever navigational elements a particular book has. And this book, let's see what it has.
Level 2, play. Level 2, play.
It has level 2.
Level 1.
And
play.
Level 1 navigation. And level 2, of course, would be a more fine navigation. It would navigate to possibly chapters, whereas maybe level 1 might navigate to different parts of the book, something like that. I'm not sure how this book is laid out. I can't remember. I read it a long time ago. The next thing I want to show you is how to use the web browser to download some content and then play that content back in the Daisy Player. And this time it's going to be some audio content. The American Printing House for the Blind makes Newsweek magazine and Reader's Digest available now as a download. And I really enjoy Newsweek especially. I'm a big news junkie, I guess. And so I frequently download the current version of Newsweek by going to the APH magazine site. And you have to be a member of the National Library Service program to be able to download these magazines. That's how APH verifies that you're eligible to download them. And so you have to be eligible through NLS and then set up an account on the APH website. So I'm going to go there now. I'm going to open up the web browser.
Open URL, tech.aph.org max.
And that site is already in the address bar since I went there earlier. So I'm going to press enter on it.
Starting web browser, http, tech.aph.org max. Home app magazine downloads.
Okay, so now I'm on the website where the magazines are. I'm going to use the web browser command that lets you jump to the first form field on the page to jump down to the edit box where I enter my login information.
Edit box.
And I'm going to type my username here.
Uppercase R O B E R T. Uppercase C A R T E R. Computer edit box.
Now it wants my password. I'm going to turn the speech off on the YouTube so that you can't hear my password.
Voice off.
I'm going to type in my password here. I'm going to turn the speech back on.
Voice on. Button. Login.
I'm on the login button, and I'm going to press enter on that.
Home app magazine downloads.
And I'm now hopefully logged in here. I'm going to move by links here on the page.
Visited link. Garlandlogo.gif. Link. Reader's Digest July 20th. Link. Newsweek July 16th, 2012.
All right, and I'm on Newsweek July 16th, 2012, which is the current issue. I'm going to press enter to download that issue.
File download dialog box.
File name, NW071612.zip.
That file name is fine, so I'm going to press Enter to start the download. And it's downloading now, and I can see on the Braille display that it's downloading at somewhere around 400 KB. So the download is pretty fast, and we'll see when it's done here. It's still downloading at this point. The total file size is 33,042 kilobytes. We're up to around almost 400 KB in the download, and we're still letting it continue here, but we're getting close. We're up around 27,000. We're now up to 29. I can see all this on the Braille display, which is one of the beauties of having a Braille device. You can easily track your download.
NW071612.zip successfully downloaded.
So Link. That's
Newsweek,
now
July 16th, 2012.
Now been downloaded. So I'm now going to exit out of here simply by closing the web browser.
Web browser.
And I'm going to go back to the file manager.
File manager, F.
Open up my downloads folder.
Flash disk, audible folder, data downloads folder 311.
And
my sister's keeper, Robert Card, the sounds of the Caribbean fold. My sister's key, NW071612.zip 47.
And now I've found the zip file of the Newsweek that we just downloaded. I'm going to press enter on this zip file to uncompress it, and we'll see how long that takes. Pressing enter right now.
Unzip to folder name, NW071612. 119 inflating, still 110.dtd.
19 items here to inflate. It's already done 8 of them. It's now done 9. 10. 11.
19 decompression completed successfully. NW071612.zip 58.
So that's how long it took to uncompress or unzip the Newsweek from APH. Now I'm going to exit out of the downloads folder.
File manager F.
Go to the Daisy player.
Open Daisy dialog box. My sister's keeper, Robert Carter, folder 13.
Showing my sister's keeper because that's the last thing we opened. I'm going to back up one level to the top of the folder structure here.
Download folder 311.
And I'm going to open up the download folder.
My sister's keeper, Robert Carr, NW071612, folder 23.
And there's the Newsweek that we just downloaded. I'm going to press space on this file name to select this Daisy book, which is Newsweek.
Select NW071612, folder 23.
I'm going to press enter on it to open it up, and hopefully it will start playing.
Newsweek, July 16th, 2012.
Newsweek, July 16th, 2012. Copyright 2012 by the Newsweek Daily Beast Company, LLC. All rights reserved. Newsweek is recorded weekly for the enjoyment of visually impaired and physically handicapped readers.
Because it's a DAISY file, we can skip through it section by section. In this case, for Newsweek, it's article by article. So let me show you how you can skip through it here.
Play.
In cooperation with Table of Contents, Letters and Contributors. Reading time, 6 minutes. Letters. The Digital 100 Power Index. Periscope. Reading time, 5 minutes. Warp Speed. News Beast. National Notebook.
And of course, you can skip backwards as well through the files, but we'll show you that there is a slight bug in the DAISY player when it comes to reading Newsweek here. And I'm confident that bug will be fixed in a new release of the firmware. But at the moment, when you skip backwards, instead of telling you the name of the section that you skip to, it speaks the time, the reading time of that particular section. It actually shows the name of the section on the Braille display, but it speaks the reading time. Let's try that. I'm going to try skipping backwards to the previous section from where we are now.
Play.
Reading time, 4 minutes. Reading time, 5 minutes.
So it said reading time, 4 minutes. That was the section we were just getting ready to start. Then I skipped back, and it said reading time, 4 minutes. And that's back to the previous section, which was called Periscope. But it didn't say Periscope. It said the reading time, but it showed Periscope on the display. But that's how you can combine the web browser with the Daisy Player to quickly download, unzip, and then play a Daisy audio file. So hopefully that gives you some idea of how all that works. And again, you have to have a subscription with the National Library Service before you can access this Newsweek magazine from APH. And you also have to have your BrailleSense U2 registered with NLS, because it has to have a key installed before it will play NLS content. But that's easily accomplished by going on the NLS Bard site, registering your player, and then getting a key that you install. The next thing that I want to show you is something that I'm really glad that HIMSS did in their version 7.0 of the firmware, is they added some social media apps to the BrailleSense U2, because these days almost everyone is involved in social media in one way or another. I personally use Twitter, which is one of the apps that they introduced. Let's go to the social media menu here.
Twitter, T.
And Twitter is the first app in that menu. There's also
Google Talk, G.
Google Talk.
MSN Messenger, N.
And MSN Messenger. So I'm going to go back up to Twitter here.
Twitter, T.
And I'm going to press enter on Twitter. And what it's going to do is log in and refresh my Twitter timeline. And then we can read through a little bit of the timeline to see what who's tweeting and what they're tweeting about at the moment. So here we go with Twitter. I'm pressing enter right now.
Connecting. Refreshing home timeline. Richter Theji, bus I'm here listening, I just forgot to tweet 131. Brian Archin, thanks to all those who joined me for the music machine today, I really enjoyed that 1231.
I'm just moving down through my timeline here.
Silverleaf 57, the show was awesome 331. Janius Soskas, RT Guardianians, NASA 7 minutes of terror as Mars probe hurtles to planet at 13,000 miles per hour HTTP. Tico CFB Mary 1, I really wish things like that would never happen. See prior RT. Mary 1, oh no RTAP, boy, 3, accidentally shoots, kills father in Indiana home, after finding his loaded gun, HTTP. Margadon, Jack 728, I rode a steam train in Chattanooga, lots of fun. 731.
So that's the 7th of 31 items. It shows 31 items at a time in your timeline. It's a pretty powerful Twitter app. You can see a particular user's timeline. You can see mentions, which means messages that have mentioned you. You can see direct messages, people who have sent you messages privately. You can, of course, reply to messages and do most everything that you would want to do in a Twitter application. The one thing that's missing that I'd like to see added someday in this app is the ability to follow a conversation by its thread. A lot of Twitter apps will let you track a conversation and read the first message that was sent in that conversation and then skip to the next message in the conversation and so forth. And that's really handy when you're wanting to try to figure out what somebody's talking about on Twitter. But this is really quite a nice implementation of Twitter. It works perfectly as a Braille-only app. As with all these applications, you don't need speech turned on at all to use any of them. And to me, that's the real value of the BrailleSense U2 is that it can be a Braille-only device, works with all these applications. It's very fast, and it's really quite powerful. I'm not going to claim that the BrailleSense U2 is as fast or as powerful as my Mac. There's no way. But it is fast enough and powerful enough that it's very pleasant to use. And remember, really, it's a high-end mobile device, sort of like an iPhone, with one major difference being that you can do it all in Braille. And I'm so excited about Braille and think that we need to do everything we can to promote the use of Braille because it's so important for people who are blind to have a written language. So obviously, I have not covered everything on this unit. There is a very nice scientific calculator, for example. I am not going to demonstrate that. For one thing, I don't know enough about math to demonstrate a lot of the scientific functions. Someone who's much better at math will have to take that one on. But it does look like a very nice calculator. And there are lots of other little apps, stopwatch, and other things that are on the unit that I haven't even talked about. There's an optional dictionary that you can purchase that can be both an English dictionary, and you can also purchase a dictionary that will let you translate from English to three other languages. And you can, of course, contact HIMSS for more information about those options. There's a free downloadable Bible that can be installed on the unit, and it offers several versions of the Bible. So there's a whole lot to this system. I will say that I personally think this hardware is very solid. It's fast enough and stable enough to support these apps. And I think that this is a big step forward in the sense that it works much more quickly and much more smoothly than its predecessor, the BrailleSense Plus, did. And honestly, the BrailleSense Plus wasn't bad. But when you use the U2, you see a significant jump in speed and consistency of how programs run and so forth. Every electronic company has an occasional failure out of the box when you purchase one of their products. When I purchased my U2, I got it and it worked perfectly, except that the internal GPS receiver did not work. It would come on for only a second and then turn itself back off. I contacted HIMSS. They had me do a couple tests and immediately agreed with me that I did have a hardware problem. The unit was brand new, and so I asked them, would they replace the unit with a new one? They said yes. They did so immediately, and I've had absolutely no problems with the unit since that time. So I would have to rate HIMSS customer service as excellent in my experience. And my standards are pretty high because I'm a big Apple fanboy, as you know, and I've grown accustomed to excellent customer service from Apple. And I would say that HIMSS ranked right up there in terms of their responsiveness to the problem that I had with the unit that I got. I don't believe that hardware failures out of the box like I experienced are any more of a problem with the U2 or with HIMSS products in general than they are with any other product out there, including Apple products. It just occasionally happens. And I'm very pleased with how it all worked out for me. I'm very pleased with this product and how it works. I use it every day professionally and in my personal life. I read tons of books on the device from Bookshare. I don't use it as my primary web browser or email client, but when I am in a meeting or in a situation where I want to browse the web or need to browse the web in Braille, the U2 works quite well for me on the majority of sites that I visit. It doesn't work well on every site. It doesn't support Flash content, for example. It doesn't work well with JavaScript, at least on some sites, but that's not an uncommon situation for a mobile browser. I would encourage anyone to do further exploration. If you're interested in this product, the BrailleSense U2, you can go to www.hims-inc, that's hims-inc.com, and get further information about the product. You can get their U.S. phone number. Their office is in Austin, Texas. You can contact them and get more information. Finally, I'm sure people will want to know whether or not the BrailleSense U2 works with the Apple iOS devices, the iPhone, the iPod Touch, and the iPad. HIMS products did work with Apple's iOS devices up until Apple released version 5.1 of iOS. At that time, they broke the HIMS product's ability to use the Braille to a keyboard to manipulate the iPhone, iPod Touch, or iPad from the BrailleSense products. It's my understanding that this bug has been fixed in iOS 6, which will be released by Apple sometime this fall. At that time, the HIMS products will once again work as a Braille display and Braille keyboard for the iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad. At that time, if people would like a demonstration of how that works, I'd be happy to do that. I want to thank you all very much for listening to this podcast. I hope it's been useful to you. And if you have questions or comments, as always, feel free to email me at techdoctor123@gmail.com. Until next time, so long.